Welcome, everyone, to the Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. As usual, this podcast is brought to you by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Aaron Fitt, first trip to the Southeastern Conference for you that did not involve the state of South Carolina. And it sounds like
I've been to Gainesville as well. I've been to Gainesville before. But
I stink.
This is the first trip to LSU in Mississippi, which is long overdue, certainly.
And it sounds like you saw some good baseball. So let's just dive right in there and talk about the Southeastern Conference this weekend. And the first one that you went to, the first part of the trip was the Baton Rouge. And a little Ray Frimes, a little Georgia LSU. Let's talk about the Bulldogs first. We haven't talked a lot about the Georgia Bulldogs this year. They started off the year in the top 25. A little bit of an off year where they really struggled against some softer competition early. It feels like they've improved as a team as the year has gone on. And they have a a first-round, supplemental first-round draft prospect, depending on who you talk to, and Alex Wood. Evaluate the Bulldogs. They lose the series at LSU, but they looked like, from afar, they had a lot of fight in them. What kind of regional team is Georgia, and what's their prospects for the postseason?
You know, I was impressed, again, with the way that they responded after two really disheartening losses. I mean, they had the lead in the eighth inning Friday and Saturday, and they lost both of those games. It would have been easy for them to roll over on Sunday, but they came out and actually came from behind to win that game. So, it's like Alex Wood said when I was talking to him on Saturday, I think we're leading the country in moral victories, which I thought was
a great line.
A good way to put it. It's a great line, and that's Georgia over the last 3 years. It seems like they just, they have a lot of character. They do have a lot of fight. They play hard all the time. I believe that, and they just managed. They're snake bitten a little bit. They just haven't been able to put everything together, and every time it seems like they're on the verge of making a run, they lose a tough game here, a tough game there, and they lost in 16 innings at Florida last weekend on Friday, and they lose two heartbreakers at LSU. I mean, it's just a tough sledding for them. It just seems like there's one thing after another, whether it's an injury or this or that. I mean, it's a tough team. But the biggest thing is they need to get Levi Himes going. I mean, that's the guy, that the senior that they really were counting on to be one of their best offensive and defensive players, kind of the catalyst for this team, and he's had a really bad year, and he's been in a funk. I think he's a really key guy for them. But they've got, I think their 1-2 punch with Wood and Palazzone is good enough to keep them in any series. Palazzone is good. I mean, it's not overpowering, as we know, but it's 86 to 90. It's firm enough, and he's got a great feel for the changeup and curveball. He exited early on Saturday with a back spasm, so hopefully he's okay, because that's huge. I mean, their whole season around, their team is built around Wood and Palazzone going deep into the game, because their bullpen's a little thinner. They don't have last year's closer Tyler Maloof, who had those 18 saves, has really good stuff. I mean, he was a key piece that they lost. They haven't had him all year. They had to move Blake Dietrich, of course, to the bullpen, where he's been pretty good, notwithstanding Saturday, where he gave up a grand slam to Mason Katz in the eighth inning. But I still think they're a solid team. Certainly they're not a top 10 or 11 team like we had them in the preseason. That was too high. But they're still in the mix for a regional. I mean, it's not a gaudy record. They do have some work to do, but they won a big series at home against Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago. They haven't gotten swept by anybody. They just need a couple more series wins right now, because right now they don't have very many.
Yeah, and it seems like the schedule's there for them. They're in their RPI. They're in bubble territory. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They're in bubble territory for me. I mean, they're probably on the bubble in, but they've got a series at home against Auburn, and they've got a home series against South Carolina that is, I think their objective from afar. Obviously, they want to win a home series. I think, in my mind, don't get swept, and you do okay. And then they're going to finish the season at Alabama. And, last year they went into the SEC tournament, Aaron, and they had to make a deep run, and they did. And, made it to postseason. To me, I think you hit the nail on the head. You look at their team and you just think that guys who are the last 3 or 4 years, you'd say they were counting on offensively Colby May and Levi Himes. Colby May was a big deal recruit, just hasn't really worked out for him, and Levi Himes having a brutal year, 222. I mean, those two guys, I think when they were mapping things out either a year or 2 years ago, they were thinking either would have been drafted by now and signed, or they were thinking would be really good seniors for them, and instead they've been pretty iffy. So feels like Georgia going to have to win, in my mind, two of those three last series to get the postseason play. Meanwhile, LSU, Aaron, this is, you know, it's hard to say what's the story of this team. Is the story of this team their starting pitching, which we thought would be very good, and it is? Is it their bullpen, which has been better than was expected by either the Cognoscenti or even their own, probably their own staff, Palminieri? Or is the story of their year Rafe Rimes, who's hitting a freaking mind-boggling 500? Which would you pick?
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest stories in college baseball is the guy hitting 541 games into the year. I mean, it's unheard of. And I wrote plenty about Rafe Rimes in Three Strikes that we posted later today. But, I mean, it's just an incredible story of a guy who, you know, was a walk-on as a freshman, got cut from the team, transferred to LSU, Eunice, you know, was a National Junior College Player of the Year, came back when they had an opening, and you know, he hit 360 last year with an elbow injury that required Tommy John surgery after the year, comes back, and, you know, he's just a hitting machine. He's really something special, and he makes their whole offense come together because, it's again, as we talked about a bunch of times, it's not a particularly imposing offense, but when you've got a guy that good in the middle, it makes everybody around him better. I mean, you know, he gives Mason Katz extra protection, and he's always on base. I mean, 53% of the time he's on base, so I mean that helps. You know, it's a lot of the best teams, I think, in the league and in the country. I mean, they've got that guy in the middle, whether it's you know, Tucker or Zunino, whether it's Christian Walker at South Carolina. You know, I mean, it's there's always somebody to anchor the lineup. I think that's important.
Yeah, James
and
Ramsey.
LSU is Rimes.
James Ramsey, Luke Maley at Kentucky, Max Muncy at Baylor. You're looking at our top 10 teams, Aaron. I can pick out a guy on all those teams. Obviously, Michael Lorenzen, I don't even necessarily hit in the middle of the lineup, but he means so much to Fullerton. You just go up and down those lineups, and you kind of pick out a guy who's that key guy offensively. I guess the thing for LSU is they kind of have two guys, with Katz having the big year that he's having, but no one's having a year like Rafe Rimes, who only 8 strikeouts in 156 at-bats. If it weren't for the fact that he's hitting 500, that would be the most impressive thing. But he's hitting 500, which is crazy. Hasn't been done in the SEC since 1983. I think there have only been 15 guys who've done it over a full season in Division I. So, you know, Dave Magadan's your last guy to do that in the SEC. I think he hit 525 in 1983. Which is
insane,
kind of mind-boggling. But, you know, tell us a little bit also about Mason Katz. I mean, like, this is the one guy who's kind of feels like he's an old-school LSU slugger.
Yeah, he's got some pop. And, you know, he, like I said, he had that grand slam on Saturday night that really electrified that place. I mean, it was a super regional Omaha kind of an atmosphere. And that place was jumping. And, you know, he's got some juice, and he's actually – I was impressed with his defense this weekend. You know, a guy that I didn't realize how good of a right field he plays. I mean, he made at least one really nice sliding catch that sticks out to me, and he's just a solid all-around player, you know. And the one thing that I will say is that LSU in general didn't play great defense this weekend, in the infield especially. I mean, Austin Nolan made some really good plays. I mean, that guy – I know scouts aren't sold on him as a big league shortstop, but boy, he makes some real big league plays. I mean, he does as good a job as anybody, charging on those slow choppers and making a strong throw. He's got a great internal clock. He's just a great player for them. I mean, Maneri calls him the best shortstop I think he's ever had. So that tells you something. But you know, Hanover struggle at third base, probably a little uncharacteristically. They made some errors this weekend that they had to overcome, and their pitching staff is good enough to do that. I mean, I was impressed with Gossman especially for showing a lot of composure on Friday in a game where, you know, he gave up five hits in one inning, and none of them were hit hard, and three of them were balls his infielders should have made plays on, I think, and they weren't given errors. But, I mean, it's he really dug deep, escaped the bases loaded jam, and the guy is very polished, I think, much more so than he was last year, that's for sure. I mean, he's got really five pitches. He's got five pitches that are viable, and he pitches inside and gets swings and misses against right-handers with a changeup, which is something you don't see often from a college pitcher, and runs that two-seamer in on you, and he's not just throwing 97 because he can. I mean, he does that too, but
right.
I mean, I think he's a pretty complete pitcher, John. I think for me, I think he's a top college pitcher on the board right now.
I'm with you. I am with you. I thought we talked about it Friday in a draft podcast with Connor Glassy. Some of the changeup has made huge strides for him, and the breaking ball was a big pitch for him as an amateur and in high school. Sounds like it kind of comes and goes, the breaking balls in college, but it sounds like, again, as a guy who's got a four pitch mix, it sounds like.
He throws a slider and a curveball. The slider is something that he just kind of started working on with Alan Dunn, the pitching coach, in the last second half of the season, way through the season, and he actually threw that considerably more than the curveball this weekend. So, but in both those pitches, I think are viable. I mean, like I said, they're solid. So, and Ryan Eads is, of course, is a big arm behind him. But as you alluded to, I was impressed with the bullpen. I think Nick Goody's a shutdown closer at the back. I mean, a guy that has an 0.78 ERA, 34 strikeouts and two walks in 23 innings. I mean, that's loud.
That is loud.
And he's good. I mean, he's 90-93 with a really nice power breaking ball, and they've got a nice supporting cast around him. Now they've got a couple of lefties with Chris Cotton and Brett Bonvillain, or however you say that.
I don't know. I don't care how they. I don't care how anybody says it. I love the way you said it. Bonvillain.
Enjoy.
Now what we need to do? We need to get JJ Cooper to say that.
Exactly.
Awesome.
That'd be great.
That would be
but,
awesome.
But anyway, it's a good staff. I mean, you got power righties around them too, with Rumbleau and McCune and Joey Bourgeois, who's also a 90-92 guy. So I mean, it's a much deeper staff than we thought it would be, or LSU thought it would be heading into the season.
Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, and you've seen you're in Starkville now, so you got to see a little left field lounge, a little Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Mississippi State, they've got a potential sixth starter who could be from their opening day lineup who could be hurt with what's their DH's name? I'm blanking on his name. Got hit by a pitch.
That's right. They did lose Trey Porter, I believe it was.
Trey Porter.
It remains to be seen how long he'll be out. It sounds like it was a metacarpal thing. Last I heard, they hadn't and x-rays yet, so I don't know. But the bigger news to me, well, just as big at least, probably bigger, is that they lost C.T. Bradford this weekend on Saturday. He had an outfield collision, hurt that shoulder again that's been injured before.
Right.
I mean, he's just such a key piece for them. He's just such a dynamic player when he's healthy and going right. I mean, I do think that Adam Frazier, the shortstop, has really emerged as a catalyst in his place. I mean, that's a guy who is a really good athlete. He can really run. He's got considerably more walks and strikeouts, so he gets on base at the top of the lineup. I mean, he's a great player, but I think the rest of their lineup is very, very unimposing. And, fortunately, they play very good defense, and they have a ton of arms, good arms, led, of course, by Chris Stratton. But, I thought Louis Pollarena pitched very well on Sunday. I mean, just a little lefty, athletic guy. Running up there 91. I mean, he didn't pitch there all the time, but he touched it, and he gives them a chance on Sundays. And he's a great team guy. He's kind of waited for his opportunity, and now he I think he kind of completes that rotation. They needed that third guy behind Stratton and Graveman, and of course their bullpen is very good with a lot of depth and a great proven bulldog closer in Caleb Reed, who just goes after you with that power breaking ball pitch after pitch, and he's just. He's as good. I think he's as good as it gets as far as a college closer. Just a guy that really knows how to win.
I am as well put. Big series win for Mississippi State this weekend, and that clearly helped their regional chances. I mean, I don't think we really thought they were necessarily on the bubble. They're 32 in the RPIs, a little bit higher than Georgia was. But Ole Miss, Aaron, the other team that we just kind of can't. I can't get my arms around. I mean, it's a very left-handed lineup. It's a pretty older, physical lineup. Feels like, they've got some pitching, maybe not as deep a pitching staff as Mississippi State, feels like Ole Miss, am I wrong in saying they feel like they should be a little bit better than they are?
You know, honestly, I think they're about what they should be. I mean, this was a team that was, what, 22 in our preseason rankings, and they're 24 right now. I mean, they're kind of a solid SEC team that wins most of their home series and doesn't get swept on the road. You know, and that's about right. I mean, I think this is a team that is a good offensive team. I mean, you know, Yarbrough and Snyder in the middle, boy. I mean, you can put that up there with any duo up in the country. I mean, you want to talk about Zeno and Tucker. Yarbrough and Snyder are pretty darn good. I mean, you know, Yarbrough is a switch hitter who's just as good from both sides. I mean, one of the best pure hitters in college baseball. And then Snyder is just a really physical older guy behind him. Hit three balls extremely hard on Sunday. One of them off the batter's eye in dead center field. One of them that was over the fence but brought back by a leaping Hunter Renfroe. And one of them that was just crushed down the line but foul. So, you know, he's a physical presence in the middle. The question with Ole Miss is the pitching depth, and they had to move RJ Hively. They kind of are using him in that Chad Bradford role a little bit that LSU used to have. And, you know, where they'll now I think somebody else is doing the same thing. I'm drawing a blank, but, where they'll use their, it's Stanford with AJ Venegas. That's what I'm thinking of. They'll use him out of the bullpen if they need him to one of the first two games, and if not, they'll start him on Sunday. And so this weekend they threw Hively and extended him in relief on Saturday. So then it's not a lot of options to start on Sunday, and that's the problem. Is they went with a kid named Bailey who's coming off labrum surgery. Tanner Bailey is his name, and he's. Kind of a stock right-hander, a big physical guy that 89-91 with a little slur, but he didn't pitch well. He didn't get an out in the first inning. Fortunately, Dylan Chavez came in, and after a shaky start, he hit a couple of guys, but then he settled in. I mean, they've got a couple of guys in the bullpen. They need Houghton Buchanan to continue to progress. He pitched well, two hitless innings in relief, big power guy, 90-94. And then Brett Huber is really a key at the back for them. I mean, he's a guy that has been dealing with some shoulder tendonitis, hadn't been himself, had kind of an up-and-down year. But it was encouraging on Sunday that he came out and looked pretty good, 89-92, pretty good stuff.
I guess that's the thing for me is I thought that their pitching depth would kind of be a plus because of guys like Buchanan and Josh Laxer, a couple of very impactful freshman arms, to go with getting Hively back, the development of Bobby Wall. But I mean, it's the SEC. It's tough, and it's tough to win with tough for freshmen to make an impact there, and that's why the other kind of SEC team I want to talk about in this somewhat abbreviated podcast is South Carolina, because the last time we visited with the Gamecocks, we talked about them being almost too young for their own good, and all they keep doing now is winning series, and I know that they've played a little bit easier part of their schedule in some ways, but they keep sweeping people too, Aaron, and they win a game 1-0 against Alabama, and they win a game 12-11. Kind of a just win baby thing, but they went and swept Auburn, they swept Mississippi State. So you sweep three straight series in the league. I don't care who you're playing. That says something to me. What's led to this turnaround for the Gamecocks?
I think they've just kind of found their groove. It's we were kind of waiting for that to happen. I mean, it took a little bit of time for them to mesh early in the year, and I think they've been swinging the bats better lately. I think that's key. They've gotten pretty good production from guys like Grayson Griner, of course, and who's settled nicely in the middle of that lineup. Dantzler, I think, had some hits this weekend, and they got some production out of Tanner English. So the newcomers have been good. I mean, they needed to be. That was the key to South Carolina's season. And I think those guys have really come into their own.
And now kind of there was a little bit of a freak injury deal for Colby Holmes, so he didn't pitch this weekend. I don't know if you've seen anything on his prognosis, but it feels like they have the pitching depth to overcome that if Holmes misses a week or two, if it's not serious.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And obviously they've kind of overcome some inconsistency by Forrest Kumas. I mean, they've got a lot of young arms. It really just feels like their season – we've noted on the podcast, but when Jordan Montgomery went into the weekend rotation, that doesn't seem like that signaled a sea change. So they almost doubled down on more freshmen, and it feels like it's really paid off for them.
Yeah, and Montgomery had a kind of a rough outing this weekend, and they made four errors behind him, three by Joey Pancake. So, I mean, that again is you know, something we've talked about this year as a concern for this team. But, you know, like we said, they got the bats going and were able to win that game anyway, 12-11.
Joey Pancake is never not fun to say that guy's name. That's the Baseball America College Podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. Aaron, let's shift out to the left coast, your usual stomping grounds. The big series of the week was UCLA and Stanford, and here comes the Cardinal, and Stanford starting to get its offense going a little bit more, scored seven runs and two wins against UCLA, the first team to 7-1 in the series. The winning team scored seven runs in every game, and you know, Oregon then also kind of separating itself a little bit from the Pac-12 pack with a sweep of Cal. That's, I don't know if that's a death blow to Cal's I don't know why I think it's funny to say death blow, but I don't know if that's a death blow for Cal's regional chances. It certainly doesn't seem to help. But Oregon kind of cementing itself at the front of the league, and Stanford, I don't know if they're going to win the Pac-12 regular season because they stumbled a couple times in that sweep against Arizona is really going to hurt them, but it still feels like Stanford, when you evaluate not necessarily their body of work, but their talent level and their team, it feels like Oregon has the best body of work and Stanford has the best team. Is that a fair evaluation?
Yep, I think you nailed it on the head. I do think now that Stanford, out of all the teams in the Pac-12, seems like the most viable national championship contender. And, you know, that's not to say that they don't have warts, but something that we've noticed is that everybody has warts this year. There isn't a juggernaut, you know, that really stands out to you. I think there's 10 teams, you know, 8 or 10 teams that all, you can throw them in a hat and, you know, good luck picking a championship favorite. I mean, we thought it was Florida for a while. They clearly have some vulnerabilities. You know, I think Stanford, you know, they still don't have a lot of arms that they trust, but I thought it was great that they got five scoreless innings out of Sahil Bloom this weekend in relief of A.J. Venegas. You know, so that can be a guy that really emerges for them down the stretch. You know, we've talked about their firepower, and their offense has gotten going again, which is key. I do like them the most out of all these teams long term, but you know, Arizona is another team to keep in mind. I mean, they've gotten their offense going as well. Obviously, against East Tennessee State, they scored a lot of runs, but that's it should be a good offensive team. We expected it to be, and it has been. I mean, they're dangerous, and you know, their pitching needs to hold up, and right now they're just kind of holding on. But you know, they're getting their starters go deep into games, even when the hitting conditions are friendly. You know, they don't have a lot of pitching depth, but I think they're pretty good too. And all these teams, we've talked about it before. I mean, Oregon, Arizona, UCLA, Stanford. You know, Arizona State, which won't be in the postseason, but they've got great pitching. I mean, they're a factor, and they've hit pretty well too. Arizona State, Oregon State. I mean, it's all these teams are you know, they're solid. They're good teams.
Right. Like you said, I think it's I think the big takeaway from what you just said is there is no obvious national championship favorite. I think if I had to pick eight for Omaha right now, I'd probably consider like 16 teams for eight. I mean, there's really no – I mean, Arkansas moves up to number 18 in our rankings this weekend and this Monday. And they just went and beat Florida on the road. And I'm not saying that they're a lock for Omaha, but they're at 18. I think they're a very legitimate Omaha team. I mean, I think you're going deeper this year than most years. And the reason I wanted to bring up that Stanford UCLA series, Aaron, is any concerns you're starting to have about the Bruins? They have a great resume. Their RPI is very high. But now they play Purdue this weekend. I'm a little bit too excited about this series, more excited than I probably should be. But it feels like if Purdue wins this series, Purdue's going to be have a real chance to be a top eight national seed. Maybe I'm overselling them a little bit, but they're certainly going to be a chance to be a one and a host, right?
They're going to host regardless. At this point, I mean, even if they lose the rest of their games, they might host because they've had a great season, and you know, they're 10 in the RPI, and they're just you know, they're in a great location. They're going to host, but I do think if they win the UCLA series, I do think they got a really good chance to be national seed because their resume is good. And this is a real opportunity for the Boilermakers. I mean, and for UCLA now, they've lost four series. You know, if you lose a fifth series, you know, I mean, it's hard to see them not hosting because their RPI is so high. I mean, they're number four in the figures I'm looking at right now. You know, if you got five series losses, all of a sudden there's a little slippery slope thing going on here with UCLA. And you know, I'm not worried about them, but at the same time, my opinion on UCLA is kind of what it was coming to the year too. I mean, I think they're a good offensive team, a good defensive team, an average pitching team, with a better bullpen than we expected. We'll give them that. That's an area where they're better than we thought they'd be coming into the year. But you know, again, it's not a juggernaut.
Yeah, there's no juggernauts, and I guess that means we probably should talk, even though we have, I feel, a lot about Florida. I mean, we thought they'd be the juggernaut, Aaron, and they got Hudson Randall back this weekend, and Carson Whitson's pitched better of late. He seems like he's still not Carson Whitson, full-fledged force Carson Whitson. You know, when he does it a couple weeks in a row, I'll believe that he's full-force Carson Whitson. But their offense is not what I thought it would be either. And that doesn't mean that their offense is bad, but Arkansas obviously can pitch, but I mean, I just thought Florida be a little bit more explosive this year, and the bottom half of their lineup feels like it's just eh.
You nailed it, and that's the word when you talk to people in the SEC who play Florida. You know, they kind of whisper almost about how, you know, everyone talks about how good they are, but really you can, you know, the bottom half of their order is not special, and you can you know, and you can pitch around those guys, and it's the guys in the middle. I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, that is the weakness. I think that's the way you have to put it. It's not as deep, I don't think, of a lineup as they had last year. And you know, I mean, if you're comparing this team with last year's team, I think last year's team was more complete. You know, they certainly had when you've got a full, strong, healthy season out of Randall and Whitson, that helps a lot. And right now they need those two guys. That to me is still the key to the whole deal. If those two guys can return to form and pitch very well down the stretch, really like Florida's chances. Now they might be able to do it with just one of those guys because Jonathan Crawford is good. He does have good stuff, but
their bullpen's ridiculous.
And their bullpen is ridiculous. They can really shorten the game with Maddox and Rodriguez, especially, and Magliozzi and, you know, Larson. I mean, it is a really good deep bullpen. There's no other way to put it.
The best thing I think about their bullpen, even though I know they like Magliozzi, but last year they had so many options. This year they go in the postseason. They're going to go. You're going to use three guys, whoever their starters are. They got to figure out three starters, but you need six people in the postseason. You need three starters. You need three relievers. And they have three. They know who their three are. Larson, Rodriguez, Maddox. They know their three.
Yep.
That's going to be their money guys. The other guys may as well just go throw their bullpens to stay loose and get ready for summer ball. They should not – I mean, that's just the way – that's how you win a national championship. You have six guys. They got to get their three starters right. To me, the other part of it, Aaron, is just getting one of those young guys at the bottom of the lineup hot, whether it's Gushue, who's not hot, Turgeon, Tobias, Schaefer. Who's your best bet to get hot for the Gators down the stretch? You had to pick one of those young guys in the second half of their lineup to show some offensive spark. I didn't even give you Cody Dent as an option because no offense to Cody, but I don't think he's an option there.
No, he's not. And I think – and Tobias isn't either because I'm pretty sure he's out for the rest of the way. But, you know, how about Vikash Ramjet, John? You know I'm going there. He's the guy. I think he needs to be the guy that really steps forward. And you know, Turgeon is what he is. He's kind of a nice little, you know, scrappy second baseman who's going to make contact and push the ball around and draw some walks. I mean, he's a solid contributor. I mean, he's not going to knock your socks off. You know, Gushue does have a lot of offensive potential, and he does have five home runs this year, but he's really struggled, it seems like, as you kind of mentioned, after a hot start. You know, so I think he's another key piece as well because they still – you know, they still believe in him, and he needs to – I think he needs to perform better. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, that is all there is to it. The Baseball America podcast, John and Aaron. Let's just wrap up, Aaron, real quick. We've got in the ACC, we have Virginia winning a series at Miami still to come with a final game. Florida State wins again, obviously not in league play. And North Carolina was not in league play. NC State kind of takes care of business against Duke this weekend. That Virginia-Miami series, that seems like the most interesting one. The Hurricanes, I think you put it very well in Tracker, they're in a serious funk and just a disastrous defensive performance by them this weekend with a five-error game. Steven Perez has kind of fallen apart defensively this year, 18 errors, and that's a guy who played some of the year at second base. Just feels like he's not physically right at shortstop. He had some elbow injuries early. They're without Peter O'Brien. I mean, just a lot of things going wrong for the Hurricanes. They aren't in danger of losing a regional spot, it doesn't feel like, but is it safe to say they're out of the regional hosting discussion right now?
Yeah. Right now, certainly. I mean, I guess if you get hot and win the rest of your games, heck, you're back in it. But
they're just not that kind of team.
They're not that kind of team. And even at full strength, I don't think they're that kind of team. I just think they're okay. And to be fair, the schedule opens up now. They've got Bethune-Cookman and Wake Forest, and then at Georgia Tech before the conference tournament. So, I mean, they could still right the ship, but they just don't, they like they've been the last couple of years. They're just okay. They're not a great team. And, and Virginia's not either, but I think Virginia is better than Miami, and Virginia is a younger team that I think is peaking at the right time, whereas Miami is definitely going in the opposite direction.
It does feel like Virginia's getting better. Feels like Clemson's getting a little bit better. That was a big weekend with them and Georgia Tech. A big series win for the Tigers, who really don't have a great resume, but they have swept those bottom teams in the ACC. Feels like Clemson and Georgia Tech, though, are regional teams. Maybe Georgia Tech still on that bubble, but kind of bubble in.
Yeah, I would say so. And Clemson, I'll have a little bit more on them in three strikes today. But, they did take a little bit of a blow this weekend, losing Kevin Brady for 2 to 4 weeks now. And Matt Campbell out indefinitely with a lat strain. We'll see how they overcome that. But, Brady's got a hamstring strain, so it's one of those things that could linger. You hope it doesn't because they need him. But, they're pitching. I think Dominic Leone's been a little inconsistent for them. He'll probably be the new Friday guy, so they need him to put it all together, throw strikes more consistently, really command the zone. But the key for Clemson this weekend, I think, was they finally got some real production out of the bottom half of their lineup, and that's been an issue for them this year. But Spencer Keboom had a huge weekend for them, and so did McGibbon and Baum and those guys, Stoltz. I mean, they got some hits. They really contributed. Brad Felder. So that's a key for Clemson going forward as well.
Keboom especially, because it's been ice cold all year.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech beat Maryland this weekend. So you look at Virginia Tech at 31 in the RPI, Clemson 33, Wake 37, Georgia Tech 38, Maryland 39. It's going to be really tough for the committee that mess. It would be nice if that mess sorted itself out, Aaron. Good luck sorting that out in the stock report this week. I'm going to let you go. We both need to go and wrap up the podcast. But the ACC, it's fair to still say very, very muddled after you have Florida State at the top.
Yeah.
North Carolina and NC State, to me, are the next two teams. And we'll see if North Carolina reacts well to the softening of its schedule and the return of Colin Moran the rest of the way. If they don't, to me, all bets are off. NC State still has the difference maker in Carlos Rodon, who was phenomenal again on Saturday. He had one bad inning. The rest of it was made it look very easy against Duke. But that league, after those top three teams, I don't think there's another team in that league who even threatens Omaha.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I really do.
All right, Aaron. Safe travels the rest of the way. You're going to see a little Southern Miss at Ole Miss before you head back, correct?
That's right, on Tuesday, and then I'm heading back on Wednesday. So it's been a good trip down here.
Outstanding. Of course, a lot of outstanding work on the draft blog as well as the college blog. So check that out from Aaron Fitt. And we want to remind you that the Baseball America College podcast is brought to you by ATEC. ATEC is the baseball training machine company, and it's committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC win every practice. Real quick, Aaron, you've got Purdue and UCLA this weekend, right?
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. That's the highlight of the schedule for me this weekend out in SoCal.
And we should mention Vanderbilt's Tim Corbin, as we just mentioned. Big series win for Vanderbilt. They beat Kentucky. If you're going to win an SEC series after you lose to Alabama, make it the team that had not lost a series all year. Vanderbilt within two games of .500, Aaron. The Commodores still have a shot to get in there. It sounds like they've played better of late, especially they pitched better. Tyler Beattie finally getting rewarded with a win, but it sounds like he's really been better the last few weeks.
He's really, I think, exactly right. He's turned the corner. He's become more like what they expect him to be. The stuff is good. I think he settled down nicely this weekend after starting that game with 11 straight balls. To finish with 7 scoreless innings is impressive. Zomek was good this weekend. The arms are I think coming together for them. They've got TJ Pecoraro now going on Fridays. Still only something like 9 or 10 months off Tommy John surgery, so he needs to hold up for them because he's a guy that they really like. But we'll see. I mean, I thought it was interesting that they moved Tony Kemp to second base this weekend because Riley Reynolds was hurt. I think that's a good spot for Tony if he can play it, and the reports I heard were pretty encouraging.
And if you can get Connor Harold back going and get some consistency out of their lineup, it'd be a big boon for the Commodores. Be good to see them finish strong, just because you know what they've gone through this year, and again the schedule they've played, it has been really, really tough. So a lot of things to look forward to this weekend. Aaron, again, great stuff from you over the weekend in SEC country. Enjoy the rest of your trip and travel safe.
Thanks, John. Take care.
For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America College Podcast. So long, everybody.